I've hit record.
Very exciting. Isn't this exciting? We're recording. Hi. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast. My name is Jazza.
My name's Jimmy.
And together, we do our best to upload every week, and we talk about social issues, politics, current events, with a UK slant, but with an international feel. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, pretty much. I think most people listening to this will know what we do, so...
Well, no, we like every now and again, Jimmy, we need to consider the fact that we may very well go viral and need to be prepared for newcomers.
It's a scary thought.
Yeah, do podcasts go viral? I feel like they don't.
I think we'd have to break some sort of news or do something outrageous, but, you know, bearing in mind...
Yeah, but you're not going to let me do anything outrageous today.
No, that's there's
so there is this story. Do you want to tell the story?
There's a story involving an injunction, which I'm sure a court injunction, so there's quite a lot of detail we're not actually allowed to go into, and therefore I've decided that we won't talk about it this week on the basis that the
very unfair
the injunction's lifting this week. And I'm sure everyone, this, it's the absurd scenario, I'm sure everyone knows what story it is I'm referring to and knows the people involved, but we're not going to...
A celebrity cheated on their partner in a threesome, and somebody, and they've decided, oh no, can't talk about that, that's against my human rights, and so I can go to jail if I say who it is, and it's really annoying. Because also, to be completely honest, I wouldn't have wanted to talk about this if it were just a story. But the fact that it's the Barbara Streisand effect of, if you try and hide a story on the internet, you hiding the story becomes the story.
Yeah, I mean, that is a pretty good summary of it. But I'd rather not talk about it, because already thinking about releasing this is giving me minor legal palpitations. But,
You're so, like, ovary up, mate. Ovary up. So ovary up. Let's flip the genders, girlfriend. Yeah. So what are we going to talk about instead, since you're not going to let me have any fun?
Instead of that legally dangerous story, we're going to talk about
dangerous.
Something that Stephen Fry said about mentally ill people and safe spaces on universities, which is...
And people who have been sexually abused as children. He's pissed off quite a lot of people. And we're going to talk about that. I feel like we're going to fall on separate sides of the argument here, Jimmy.
I'm going to fall on the correct side of the argument, and you will fall on the incorrect one.
Never true.
No change there, I suppose.
Secondly, you may have seen in the news, the current president of Brazil is facing an impeachment because of various reasons. Her name is Dilma Rousseff. She's halfway through her second term as president. And she's having a bit of Barney down in the Southern Hemisphere on the South American continent because of previous apparent kickbacks that were awarded to the petroleum company that she used to work for. Also, she's super unpopular because the economy is doing shit. Also, people want to impeach her because she apparently lied about the economy in the run-up to the 2014 election. It's all very complicated.
Accounting chicanery going on.
The sexiest of stories always revolve around accountancy, Jimmy.
We found that out when we covered the Panama Papers.
Indeed.
Yeah.
For those of you who missed it, go to last week's podcast.
All about numbers. And the last story we're going to cover, he says, like, trying to remember what it was we agreed.
Germany.
Oh, yeah, Germany. This German comedian.
Don't segue into something you don't know what you're segueing into, Jimmy. Like, I feel like that's a general rule of broadcast. Is this broadcast? This is broadcast.
I think it's broadcast, but... Okay. Anyway, this German comedian read out a poem on German national television about, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, the Turkish president, Erdogan.
I don't even know this guy, and I'm pretty sure you pronounced that incorrectly.
I think that's the surname is the only bit I can pronounce correctly. It's Recep Erdogan. There is a middle name involved.
Anyway,
the he read out this poem, basically accusing the Turkish president of being a goat fucker. And that is, I think, a literal translation. And because Germany has this old rule on the books, this old law, which means you can't actually insult foreign ministers or foreign diplomats, it means that the Turkish president can now prosecute this guy, this German comedian, for what he has said. And it's because of the thing going on with the migrant crisis in Europe, it's all become quite complicated and... it's quite a ridiculous story, but we'll go into the details in the third segment.
Oh, very exciting. First of all, though, let's talk about Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry, Bay of the... Well, previous Bay of the Internet, has waded into some controversy this week, unfortunately. Poor guy. He's not the best friend of the interwebs right now. He's quit Twitter after being told that he's a terrible person for calling a friend of his a bag lady.
I totally forgot about that story.
Yeah, we covered that story, Jimmy.
Oh, God.
But now he was on a show called The Rubin Report. Can you pitch the Rubin Report for me, Jimmy, very quickly?
It's kind of an alternative, like US series of interviews. I think Rubin used to work on, I think it's Dave Rubin is his name, used to work with the Young Turks, which is a fairly famous YouTube channel. But he eventually kind of deliberately split off from what he views as the leftishness that the Young Turks represent, and he's now kind of, I guess he's inched more towards the libertarian side, so a lot of his interviews revolve around free speech and Islamic extremism and political correctness, and that's mostly what he talks about now. Like one of his twice interviewed guests is Milo Yiannopoulos,
who's a friend of this podcast.
Friend is probably putting it way too strongly.
We mention him way more often than we should.
Yes, that's certainly true. He's obviously interviewed Stephen Fry, Douglas Murray, who's a neocon, British neocon commentator. He's also interviewed he's interviewed Tommy Robinson, the former EDL leader. So he's interviewed quite a few interesting guys, but it is all around this bent of criticising the politically correct left and the kind of creeping authoritarianism of that movement. So you can see why I watch it, Jazza.
Yeah, you bloody love that shit, don't you?
Yeah,
so
I do.
Stephen Fry, seemed to love the internet when he could say whatever the bloody hell he wanted on his Twitter account, was invited onto the show and made a variety of comments, one of which kind of stuck out for the majority, was latched onto by the mainstream
the press,
media,
bastard pressman.
The bastard press was latched onto the a specific comment that he made. So he said he bemoaned the fact that trigger warnings were a thing, that you couldn't show plays like Macbeth in their entirety now because they have children dying, and you can't show those kinds of things because it triggers a time when Uncle touched you in that special place. And he says that if you pity yourself because you had a sexual experience that was not consensual when you were younger, grow up, get over it. Because if you have self-pity, then you're the worst kind of human being. I paraphrased, but that's essentially what he said.
That is roughly what he said.
It is genuinely roughly what he said, which I think is mildly shocking and quite... one wouldn't expect it from somebody like Fry, I don't think. Especially as he is somebody who has been so outspoken about his own history with stuff like mental illness. He is very openly bipolar. He's made attempts on his life several times, and through speaking about his experience with mental health, he has become an advocate, a spokesperson for Mind UK, which is a mental health charity.
All of that somewhat immunizes him against some of the criticism that he's received? Because he's obviously not somebody who doesn't take mental health seriously, but I think like the reaction to this, to me at least, has been inappropriate. I'm not just saying that from the free speech absolutist position. I'm saying that more from there was a specific context in which these comments were made, which appears to have been ignored in the way they've been received.
So the thing is, this isn't the first time that Stephen Fry has said these kinds of things about people who have been abused when they were younger. He had an interview on Newsnight in 2014 where he basically belittled... it was like when we were talking about the Yewstree scandal, the scandal of several prominent entertainers and politicians in the UK getting away with child abuse. And that being hidden by the establishment. And he said that, if you get tapped on the bottom by an old man when you're like a young teenager, or if you're a young person, then you should just brush it off and that's fine. And I think that really, it really overlooks how traumatic those kinds of experiences are for people. When you're a 14-year-old kid, the last thing you want is a 60-year-old man groping you. And that's essentially what happens. And it might seem like a little thing for somebody looking on the outside, but those experiences stay with people, like, forever, and affect, like, your life forever.
I definitely saw...
So I think that we have...
Well, I have to pull you up there. I definitely saw some research a while back which suggested that a lot of people who are molested or groped or whatever when they're young, actually, it doesn't really make a big impact on their psychology. I'm not denying that for a lot of people, it is very traumatic, but I've definitely seen some reasonable, like at least one reasonable study actually dispute what you've just said.
Jimmy, you have a hypothetical daughter now. How would you feel if she was groped by an older person?
I mean, no, I'm not. That doesn't actually respond to my point. My point was that...
No, but I feel like nobody wants their child to have to go through something like that.
No, I agree. That wasn't...
There's a gut response to...
You're not actually arguing with my point. You're making an entirely different point.
Am I?
Yeah, because what I was disputing, you said it's traumatic for all of those people, or that at least was the implication, and I don't think it is.
In the same way,
some people, if they're like in a physical fight, for some people that it would be very traumatic, and for other people that wouldn't be very traumatic if you were beaten up, you know, if somebody physically attacked you. People do actually respond differently to those sorts of experiences.
Of course they do. I'm not saying that absolutely everybody who has been groped by somebody has a traumatic experience, but I think that we've decided as a culture that that is something that young people shouldn't have to go through if they are a minor.
Yeah, no, I'm not disputing that, but that's not, you know, that wasn't that didn't disagree with my point of view, as in the point I was trying to raise.
So what I'm trying to get across is that these things that happen to people are bad.
Yes.
And so that, and that's for a variety of reasons, because they cause traumatic experiences, because they are non-consensual, because, quite frankly, nobody wants anybody young who they know to go through something like that, whether or not it scars deeply forever. Hmm. And Stephen Fry brushed it off with, grow up. And I think that that's the issue. He clearly takes mental health incredibly seriously, but seems to take mental health that he has had an experience with incredibly seriously and not others. And that's quite sad.
But in the context of the Rubin report, these comments were made in a discussion about intellectual freedom and about university life. Mm-hmm. And even in your summary, I think you made the point that he talks about certain plays can't be put on because they deal with subjects that are viewed as inappropriate or might upset people. He has something of a point there. I mean, I think
it's
hyperbolic the way he's presented it. I think in general, even though, you know, the media, especially certainly in the UK, has covered a lot of this university censorship, and I think there are genuine problems, but at the same time, if you read the comment threads for like any one of these stories, you see a lot of students chiming in and they say, well, actually, this doesn't represent my university experience at all. Like there's still a lot of intellectual freedom on universities, but there is this small censorious element, which I think is particularly well represented in student unions. And that's part of the reason why university life.
I think the two of us agree with that. But also, I think that it says a lot about his general attitudes towards stuff like like non-consensual touching of younger people, that he would use that as an example to justify justify the one's ability to be able to put on a play like Macbeth or something, or whatever he's trying to make the point as. Like, the thing is, it was at the very end of this interview, and it was actually quite a scattergun. Like, he went from point to point to point,
a rambling, incoherent interview in general, I thought.
Yeah. And I don't think that he was kind of trying to make a point about freedom of speech with his specific comments about people who receive those kinds of abuses that he talked about. I think that he was just kind of rambling about generic points, and I think that that's been quite... I think that that's very similar to the majority of the stuff that he does in his public life at the moment. He just seems to be really pissed off at everything and rambling, and he needs to, like, go on holiday.
I think there's definitely an argument. Like, some of the questions that Rubin put to Fry in this interview, you kind of think, I'm not really interested in... I mean, I watched the interview, so obviously I was interested enough, but there's certain... Stephen Fry is an actor and a comedian and a writer, and those are things that he does well. And I guess to a certain extent, he is qualified to comment on freedom of speech, because that does touch on... that touches on all the areas of his work. But at the same time, some of the subjects that he was touching on during the course of that, it doesn't seem to me that he's particularly qualified to speak about them. I mean, he does this whole rambling blurb about the American Revolution at the start of the interview, which is just totally inappropriate, just because it doesn't really relate to the subject at hand, ultimately.
Yeah.
One thing that does strike me, I mean, the backlash to this and the controversy does in some way illustrate his point about the level of public discourse and the shrill reactions that people have to comments being made. And you can say what he said was stupid and, you know, wrong and immoral even, but there does seem to me this sense that and it's almost like the way American media life has influenced British media life, is that it's just two groups of people screaming at one another, as opposed to anybody actually making any reasonable comment. I mean, it could have just been ignored what he said, and it's just like, well, or you could...
Yeah, but what's something that Stephen Fry, who is an ambassador for Mind UK, says about mental health and people who are victims of abuse, that I think that's newsworthy. I think that that's justifiable in terms of being part of the news cycle.
I mean, it's newsworthy in the sense of entertainment. I don't know. I mean, it's... Yeah, vaguely, I guess. But Mind is quite a big charity as it goes.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, that's a pretty good point, but at the same time...
I win.
I don't know, but it isn't just this story that, you know, people have this reaction to. It's like anything that anyone conservative says about Islam, for instance, has quite a similar reaction to what's gone on. Like, I remember Martin Amis, a British novelist, said some, you know, controversial things about Islam a couple of years back, and it was a similar response to this. He was invited on Newsnight, not Newsnight, Channel 4 News, and Jon Snow kind of attacked him or whatever, not physically. But yeah, it does somewhat demonstrate Fry's point that it is very infantile, a lot of our discourse, and it often revolves around, you can't say that because that upsets me, or that disagrees with my point of view, or whatever.
Yeah, so I agree with him on that point. I think that I'm not sure what places have stopped people from showing Titus Andronicus or by reading Macbeth in schools or whatever. I think that those cases are actually few and far between. I don't think it happens nearly as much as people make out, because the edge cases get blown up to such huge disproportion. I feel like such a big fuss wouldn't be made every time that it happens. But it was specifically the contempt that he showed for people that are abused in one way, shape or form, and whether or not that is traumatic in the long term for the person who goes through that. I think that the contempt that he showed really shows an ugly side to him. The fact that he's said it many times before is really disappointing for someone who one imagines is incredibly thoughtful and who has been put up on a pedestal by many in the past, not least by serious charities like Mind. Boo you, Mr. Fry.
Just reading back his statement, though, it's clear that when he talks about somebody being touched in a nasty place, he is talking about that in the context of censorship. He's not talking about that necessarily in this. I don't pick up from his statement that he has no sympathy for these people.
He says, "It's a great shame, and we're all very sorry that your uncle touched you in that nasty place. You get some of my sympathy, but your self-pity gets none of my sympathy, because self-pity is the ugliest emotion in humanity. Grow up."
But when he says self-pity, the previous like paragraph, just before he says what you've just said, is he says, "There are many, many great places which contain rapes, yada, yada, yada. They're terrible things and have to be thought about. But if you say you can't watch this play, you can't watch Titus and Andronicus because your uncle touched you in a nasty place," I'm kind of shortening it. "Well, I'm sorry." And then he goes on to say what you've just said. It is in the context of free speech. I don't think he's saying... I mean, it's clear he's not saying...
He can have as much fruity speech as he blooming likes. He said a really douchey thing, and he said stuff like stuff along these lines in the past.
I mean, if he said stuff along these lines in the past, that's fair enough, but you are mischaracterizing what he said this time round.
I don't think I am at all. I think that his choice to go and use that as an example of something that should be treated with content, I think that that shows his general attitude towards people who go through that, and it isn't a huge amount of sympathy. He says, "You get some of my sympathy," but anybody who acknowledges, "Yes, I've been through something really traumatic and this did do something terrible to me," because that does happen to people who go through abuse when they are younger, that's ridiculous, because it completely writes off somebody's experience. Because though you may not believe that absolutely everybody that gets their bum pinched by an old man at a fairground ends up having decades of repressed mental illness, it does, like, those incidents do affect people really gravely sometimes, and to write it all off in a way like that,
definition, he didn't write it all off. I mean, you even admitted, he said, "You get some of my sympathy." That's not a complete write-off by any means. But also, I mean, we both know this because we actually do this podcast, but when you're caught up in the heat at the moment, like making a point, and yeah, I mean, I guess I'm excusing it, but there is a tendency to go overboard. And I think, to an extent, that is what's happened here.
Completely. And I think that would be a legitimate case to make. If we haven't heard him say similar things about this before, and this was just kind of like another case of him poo-pooing people who go through horrible things when they're younger. So there. I've had it, Jimmy. What are we going to do next? I don't want to talk about it anymore.
What are we going to do next?
Oh, Dilma Rousseff.
Dilma Rousseff from Brazil, and she has a far more pronounceable name than the Turkish guy. So we'll go over to that segment next.
Excellent. Dilma Rousseff is Brazil's first female president. She's very famous because of that. She is the president.
She's done other things. She's not just female.
She has. She used to be high up in Petrobras, which is a big petroleum company in Brazil. And she was the darling, like the mentee of, oh God, what's his name?
That guy.
Lula, who was the famous president at the beginning of the 21st century of Brazil, who was incredibly popular and won two terms under the Workers Party, who Dilma Rousseff is currently the president, is currently being representing as by being president.
So the Workers Party is the centre-left party in Brazil, is that right?
They're pretty far left in the European sense.
Okay.
So basically, Brazil had a, like quite a lot of South America, had a dictatorship, a military dictatorship, until 1985. And there was a coup in the 60s, that was backed by the US,
The US backed a lot of coups.
No, the US backed like every coup under the bloody sun. Which is actually quite telling because Dilma Rousseff herself was a guerrilla fighter in the first kind of civil war during that coup, and she was captured and she was tortured during that time. It's been proven in like the early 70s this was under the military dictatorship. So basically now, because of several accusations pointed at her with regards to her campaigning for her second term as president in 2014, and because of kickbacks that she gave to allegedly to Petrobras. See, I'm doing the legal thing like you wanted, Jimmy.
Yeah.
She is being impeached, or is in the process of being impeached by the Brazilian government. She was just...
Well, it's Brazilian Congress.
Yeah, so Congress have managed to get the two-thirds majority that they need in order to start the impeachment process. She's now going to have several hearings in the Brazilian Senate, where there are 81 members, and they need a two-thirds majority there as well in order to actually carry out her impeachment. Her vice president, who would in theory take over as president if she were impeached, called Michel Temer, I've just butchered that name, I'm pretty sure, my Portuguese is absolutely terrible, he could take over as president and then get impeached again because he's kind of wrapped up with all of the same things that Dilma is wrapped up with.
So it's impeachment for everyone, is that what you're saying?
Impeachment for all. And basically the reason that this is happening probably actually has very little to do with kind of papering over of economic problems in the run-up to the 2014 election, and less to do with the Petrobras scandal, which is called the car washing scandal, I believe, in Brazil. Basically, she's really, really unpopular because Brazil is going through a very deep recession at the moment.
Isn't it kind of her fault that it's going through a recession?
Arguably. So there's also... but basically, the Labour, the Workers' Party, who Dilma Rousseff represents, is incredibly popular amongst the poor in Brazil because they have done an awful lot in order to reduce really extreme poverty within the country. Everybody else has kind of had a bit of a shit time. And there's been loads of controversies in Brazil in the run-up to the Olympics that they are hosting in Rio de Janeiro this year. There's been lots of controversies in terms of corruption. Something like two-thirds of the people in the Congress have got criminal charges brought against them in one way or another. Like, Brazil politics is hilarious. And this is kind of just quite a dramatic beginning to the year for the Brazilians, essentially.
This has kind of been rumbling on for a very, very long time, though, hasn't it? I mean,
ages, since, like, the middle of last year.
I mean, I thought it was since... No, it wasn't. It wasn't since before she was elected, because she was re-elected. Was it in 2015?
2014 was 2014. She was re-elected. Yeah, she does 2 4-year terms.
Right. Okay.
Although is only halfway through her second, and her popularity levels are so astronomically low. Like, she's in the teens, which is so shocking because she was incredibly popular when she was elected again in 2014. She had like 50, the Workers' Party had 58% approval ratings amongst the Brazilian public, and she had like something over 70% approval ratings, which is like really high for a democracy. And this has just plummeted into the teens now, and is really, really quite shocking. What's very interesting, though, is that her predecessor and mentor and previous president, Lula, he's still super, super popular. And amongst all of the people who could possibly run if there were a double impeachment of Rousseff and Temer, her vice president, then Lula could probably run and win, which is quite hilarious, seeing as he actually is also tied up with a bit of the Petrobras scandal, allegedly.
So Lula's actually, I mean, you mentioned he was a really popular president. He actually comes from quite a working class background and like managed to rise up, which is rise up through the ranks to become, I think, a mayor of I don't want to say Rio de Janeiro, but a mayor of a major Brazilian city, and then he eventually got to the presidency, obviously. But as you say, he is wrapped up in this, and actually recently he was offered a cabinet post in government in order to delay any potential impeachment proceedings against him.
And so basically one of the big things that we've learned about Brazilian politics is that nobody knows how to deal with audio files and how to keep them secure. So there is a recording that was leaked online between Rousseff and Lula, basically with the two of them allegedly saying that
I think we can take away the allegedly on this one.
Can we? Okay, so they were having a chat about the fact that, I'll give you this position in government, because you get certain immunities if you have a government decision against criminal indictment in Brazil. And he was like, and she was like, oh yeah, I'll give you this job and you won't get arrested. Lol. Which is insane. And then also, Rousseff's vice president, Temer, he was, there's a recording of him going around the internet practicing taking over the presidency in a speech. And he apparently, he shared it to the wrong WhatsApp group, which is just glorious.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Old people just shouldn't be able to use phones.
I mean, old people can't use phones, I think is what we've learned from this.
Yeah, why was he practicing and recording himself? Like, that's just...
Who is he sending it to? I mean, who did he intend to send it to?
God knows, but it ended up being leaked, and that's on the internet now, and everybody's incredibly embarrassed. Thing is, though, this is being seen as just an... because of Dilma's really low approval ratings, this is being seen as just a chance to get rid of her. There is actually no evidence tying Dilma herself to any of the alleged kickbacks that were given to Petrobras, despite her history with the company. And this is just being seen as a chance to get the Workers' Party out. So it's all a bit dodge, man.
I mean, obviously the famous impeachment that listeners will be familiar with is the one of Bill Clinton and the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Mm-hmm. But it seems like that impeachment, even today, is viewed in very political terms. It was viewed as an opportunity for the Republicans to have a dig at the Democrats and potentially like get a president removed. But there was also quite a lot of evidence that the impeachment was justified, I think. Mm-hmm. And if it's part of a political process, it's very hard to remove an impeachment from that context. And therefore, it's always going to be vulnerable to some allegations that it's just being used as a political football as opposed to, you know, a serious issue about defending democracy.
Sure, of course. Although I've done a reasonable amount of reading on this, Jimmy. You'll be surprised to know. And there really is not an awful lot of evidence that Dilma herself is tied in with the Petrobras stuff. Basically, the giving of contracts to Petrobras, the petroleum company, favoured over other companies. And to use that as like one of the reasons is a bit of a stretch, which is why they've had to double it up with the fact that she may or may not have fudged some of the statistics about the Brazilian economy that made it look like the economy was doing a lot better than it actually was. And then the fact that coupled with the deep recession that Brazil is now in, with unemployment super high, with poverty going up, she is... people just jumped on that opportunity.
So there's an argument as to... is it better? I mean, this is before the impeachment proceedings took place, but some people are arguing that even though it does somewhat look as though Rousseff is a bit dirty, it would be better just to leave her in power and allow the system to actually sort itself out through further elections later down the line, rather than do what they've done and potentially throw the system into complete chaos and leave Brazil without a proper government for several years, perhaps. Do you have a view on that?
Well, it looks from what I've seen, it looks like if there were a double impeachment, the country would basically just ramp up really quickly to have an election before 2018, which is the next presidential election anyway. Mm. they have a presidential, at the latest, they need to have a presidential election in 2018 anyway. And I think Belgium has proven that you don't actually need governments to get shit done. So I am doubtful that this is something that's going to bring down Brazilian democracy. But it's certainly something to get the popcorn out for.
I'm glad you're enjoying it so much.
I'm having
a lot of Brazilians are suffering.
Who needs the Kardashians when you've got Dilma fucking Rousseff?
Maybe you need some better hobbies. Maybe that's what we've learned.
Definitely. Do you have any more questions?
I don't. I mean, it will be kind of semi. It's been an interesting scandal, though. I've read a fair amount about it and not really absorbed it, apparently. It's been kind of ongoing, like the whole Petrobras thing really ramped up, and I think the former chief executive of that company is now in jail. I don't recall his name, but it's been interesting to watch it snowball, because it started relatively small and it's been ongoing for months and months. Yeah. And months, and it's interesting that it has finally now got to this stage.
Yeah, but mate, we're still nowhere near the end. Like, she has to have hearings at the Senate, and then they have to think about impeaching her. And to be completely honest, in terms of the way that the Senate works, there's only 81 of them, whereas in the lower house, there's over 500. And so they're a lot easier to whip because there's fewer senators. Hmm. All she needs is to convince over a third of them to be like, guys, do we really need an impeachment right now? And she'll put it just like that, because me and Dilma are busy mates. But being like, I feel like it's much more likely that she'll be able to block it in the Senate rather than in the House of Representatives, or the Brazilian equivalent of the representatives.
It's interesting, like, just comparing the presidential system with our own parliamentary system, where the executive is intimately tied up with the legislature, and just it seems like so much more can go wrong in a presidential system, and you can just be left with a non-functioning government. This and like what's gone on in kind of the US with the stalemated Congress just kind of makes me somewhat happy that we have a parliamentary system. That's one of the things that I've kind of picked up from this story.
Wow, are you saying that Westminster isn't broken?
I mean, it is broken in its own way, but, you know, they still get stuff done. Although,
but it's our broken thing.
All right, on that note, should we talk about German comedians?
Yeah, I know nothing about this, so I'm asking all the questions. So, Jimmy, tell me about what's happened in Germany and apparently people fucking goats.
So there's this satirist called Jan Böhmermann, who's a German comic, if you can believe it. Obvious joke. But basically he went on to German television and read out this very insulting poem to the Turkish president, who I'm going to refer to as Erdogan, because I've realised I can't pronounce his full name.
It's really cute when you try with foreign things, Jimmy. Don't worry.
It is, you know.
It's very on brand for you.
A little Englander. But he read out this poem, and it accused Erdogan of, among other things, fucking a goat and also enjoying watching child porn as well.
That crosses a line.
I mean, it's quite bad. And as I said in the introduction to this, there is a German law which will now be repealed at some point, but it's currently effective, which means that it's illegal to... it's illegal to actually insult foreign officials on German TV, and I assume in the newspapers as well, although I'm not 100% sure if that's covered. As I said, that law is going to be repealed, but the Turkish government has protested to Angela Merkel. They said this is outrageous, and this is obviously going on in the context of the migration crisis and the deal between Germany and Turkey. And because of that, Merkel has caved and has said, yes, we're going to allow you to go ahead and prosecute this guy who is now under police protection because of what he said.
Lol.
And it should be pointed out, he read out this poem not merely in full knowledge of the law, but actually deliberately to flout the law. It was deliberately intended that he was going to provoke this law and then see what happened.
So justify this law to me. What's the thinking behind it?
I have no idea. I mean... You could, I suppose it's...
Like, was I know that Germany has a lot of guilt that it deals with, but was Hitler did Hitler come to power because foreign officials were being insulted? Like, help me out here.
I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it is in some way connected to...
Of course, it is. Everything in modern Germany is in some way, shape, or form.
Well, I think that's because we continually remind them of it, but...
Sorry, guys.
For instance, Germany actually outlaws neo-Nazi parties, you can also get sent to jail if you deny that the Holocaust happened. To be fair, France has a similar law to that, but from like an English perspective, both of those laws are somewhat ridiculous. I mean, we don't outlaw neo-Nazi parties, although we do have hate speech laws and that sort of thing. But I think it's fair to assume that this law is in some way connected to Germany's past. I'm not really sure what the justification for it remaining on the statute books is. It might just be one of those things that's kind of been left there. And
like the fact that London cabbies have to carry around a bale of hay for the horses.
Is that still true?
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's a really good old wives' tale.
It does sound good. All that thing about you're allowed to shoot a Welshman with a bow and arrow so long as you're within a certain distance of a town. I think it's Anglesey.
Really? Yeah. Or the fact that Freemasons in London are allowed to shepherd their sheep across London Bridge. But anyway, we're getting away from ourselves.
We are somewhat getting away from ourselves. But it sounds as though it's up to the discretion of the German government. We actually have quite a few laws in Britain that are only invoked on the say-so of the Attorney General, who's the chief legal officer in the British government. So I assume it's a similar sort of thing there. But this, as I said before, this is happening in the midst of a deal between Turkey and Germany, or Turkey and the EU, I should say, that's largely been negotiated by Germany to actually take back X number of migrants in return for various benefits, including like a visa waiver program for Turkish tourists who want to travel to Europe, and potential talks about Turkey joining the EU, which will never happen, at least not for a very long time now. But that's been officially at least put back on the table. Merkel hasn't come out of this looking too good, wouldn't you say, Jazza?
Like, she's pussyfooting around everything at the moment, justly so. Like, politically, she should be pussyfooting around everything. Probably not the best gendered words for me to be using.
That's a cat, but, mate.
Yeah, but, you know, means something else. But she... like, I'm not sure what the options are on her end, because there is a law that needs to be upheld, right? Or am I being incredibly naive about the whole thing?
Well, if it's up to the discretion of the government, I mean, governments routinely abolish laws without actually abolishing them. They just, like, one way or the other, just stop enforcing them. There's probably, like, a special legal term for it. But, I mean, a famous example in Britain, I guess, would be that you can get away with carrying around a small amount of marijuana, and if you're caught, you won't be, like, sent to jail or anything. You won't get in trouble. They'll just take it off you. And that's a routine part of law enforcement in every society, is that ultimately you'll probably have more laws on the books than can be reasonably enforced, and therefore there's a certain discretionary basis on as to how you enforce them. So I don't feel she's obligated from a legal perspective. I might be wrong about that, but I think it's a purely political prosecution, basically.
Then what does she stand to gain out of this, apart from keeping the Turkish on side?
Absolutely nothing.
And
really.
Then what do... if that's the case, what do the Turkish stand to gain from this apart from... what do the Turkish stand to gain from this? Like, why would they even think about bringing charges against this guy?
So...
It just seems insane.
Erdogan is a famously thin-skinned autocrat.
Is he like Trump? So
yes,
whatever you say,
yes.
He has, like, small hands.
I don't know if he has a tiny cock, if that's what you're asking.
You're the one who's always scared about us getting in trouble with libel. I feel like we're going to get sued left, right, and centre now.
I don't feel we can sufficiently damage the reputation of a man who routinely locks up journalists and has amended the constitution so he could run for a third term as president, and is trying to give himself even more powers.
Allegedly.
No, I mean, that is just happening. and is also totally fucked off over the Kurds, to the extent he's actually killed them when he's supposed to be fighting ISIS. I mean, this man's a total scumbag, so, you know, me saying he's a tiny penis really
so
is never
hint
of that.
Isn't this actually, hasn't Merkel actually done the German people a favour by allowing this comedian to be able to give two fingers up at this law and for it to be contested in court? Because this obviously isn't going to be able to go through, right? Like, the German legal system isn't that batty.
I don't know. I mean, it does happen in legal cases that they just follow the due process in law and people end up getting convicted. I mean, it's possible he might be, I guess, this is purely guesswork because I've almost no knowledge of the German legal system. But it's possible that he could get convicted and not really get sentenced like at all. It could just be a kind of nominal conviction. It's possible that it will collapse later or it will be withdrawn later at a time where it's more politically suitable for the German government. I really don't know.
Let's get broad in our coverage of this. I feel like we both kind of agree that these kinds of laws are ridiculous. Can this ever be justified?
Can it ever be justified that there's a law forbidding
a certain type of speech?
What, any type of speech?
So a type of speech like this that is clearly meant to be satirical. Comedy, basically. I talked about this when the Fratocrat twins were on at the end of last year. And it seems like there's... To be honest, when you're doing a comedy gig, when you're a performer, what you're doing is creating, like, a space around you that is basically like, guys, I'm gonna offend the shit out of you. Mm. And it's slightly different when that goes into kind of broadcast mediums, because you're not being invited into people's spaces, you're being placed in people's spaces.
I think that's quite different, especially now because there's such a range of media available. Like, you're not forced to watch a TV show, are you? You can always turn it off or switch channels.
Yeah, sure, but it's very different somebody choosing to go to a comedy gig and then having a comedy gig broadcast into their home. I think those are two very different things. And some people are very lazy and have lost the remote control.
It isn't different at all. I don't think it should be treated differently. Anyone who chooses to watch a TV show and then gets offended by it when they could just turn it off is just a fucking moron.
Okay, so maybe I was a bit too macro in my original question. Okay. Do you think that specifically the banning of talking badly about about foreign dignitaries is ever justified?
I'm trying to think of a scenario where it would be. I mean, we wouldn't accept any limits on... we wouldn't accept any extra limits on insulting our own officials about things. I mean, in theory, a politician...
Then we wouldn't have had Pinata Pig Cameron.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, like, David Cameron could actually have sued Isabel Oakeshott and Michael Ashcroft, the two authors of the biography that, you know, suggested that he stuck his dick in the mouth of a dead pig.
But he didn't, which is proof he did it.
I mean, he didn't because there's a law in politics that politicians generally do not sue for libel, because what happens is it ends up in a court case and then all the details are pored over at length and they're reported and reported and reported by the press. And ultimately, even if you win some kind of damages, you've lost in the public sphere, which for a politician is obviously very bad. I think that it's reasonable that politicians be able to rely on things like libel laws and on the normal limits to speech that everybody else can rely on, to the extent that they can afford a lawyer. But I wouldn't really advocate any extra protections. Are there any scenarios you can envision where you would?
I feel like wartime. Probably there is a case for it if there's a particular alliance that is incredibly important. For whatever reason, I think it could probably be justified. I am thinking like world wars. moving on from like being able to justify it, because I think that I've flogged this dead horse of trying to do so as much as I can. Do you like, I think that something has to be said for the comedian who has chosen to make a stand against it, right? Like, he's put his neck on the line for the case of free speech. Or is he just being a bit of a twat?
I think he is being a bit of a twat, but that's sort of the point of a comedian, isn't it? It might be that there's no real distinction between the two. He has put his neck on the line for free speech, but he's also being a bit of a knob. I don't feel there's a disagreement with those two things.
Yeah, ultimately. I mean, when you said that he said that the
child porn thing.
Yeah, the child porn thing was a bit much.
That's a bit strong, isn't it?
It is a bit strong, even for like a guy who jails journalists. I think that is a bit strong.
The thing is that it's not significantly more controversial than a lot of the things that Frankie Boyle, a Scottish comedian in the UK, has said. I mean, he said things about like how dry the Queen's pussy is and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but like, again, it's all about the space that you have around you. I feel like this...
Fuck this idea of space. What is this?
Space is really important in the social sciences, Jimmy. I want you to sit down and understand.
The quote, social sciences.
Yes! Why are you laughing at me? It's what I'm studying.
Is that what the Truman... What position did the Truman Brothers take on this?
I don't know.
Oh, well, you mentioned it earlier.
Did I? Oh, the Truman... Oh, yeah.
How useless, man.
They want to be able to tell jokes all the time.
So they didn't draw...
But they are a pair of comedians, and so... And they're also a pair of comedians with very, like, dirty mouths and good hearts. Whereas sometimes a comedian doesn't always have those intentions.
Is it necessary to have those intentions in order to claim the right to free speech?
I think that if you're telling a joke, you should probably be telling a joke and not, like, committing libel. And I think that it's really difficult to define the two. But a joke has to be funny. And that does take into consideration the space that the joke is told in.
I think it's just the language of social sciences kind of...
It's so wanky, I love it. It's made for me.
I mean, it's just very vapid, isn't it? It doesn't really... There's absolutely nothing concrete about it. It's very hard to pin anything down when it comes to social sciences. I know I know that's the point, but it just doesn't sound convincing. I mean...
Okay, so whose side are we on? We're backing the comedian, even though he's a wanker.
Jan Böhmermann.
Jan Böhmermann.
We are backing him.
Hashtag stand with Jan Böhmermann.
Stand with Yang works.
Yeah, sure, we'll do that. Awesome. Shall we finish this now?
Yeah, probably.
If you have enjoyed this, please subscribe to the podcast and you'd like to listen to it again. Have a listen to our back catalogue. Talk to us on Twitter. We're at Right Dishonor. If you're on iTunes or whatever medium you're listening to us on, do leave us 5 stars. Or however many stars you want, don't care. And leave us a review as well. Reviews help us loads to make sure that we actually turn up in people's searches when they look for politics. Because, quite frankly, The Guardian and the BBC have kind of swamped the whole of iTunes with too many political podcasts.
Hashtag first world problems.
Hashtag indie podcast problems.
It's a thing.
Well, it is now. We've said it. Okay, shall we go? I'm Jazza John.
I'm Jimmy Nichols.
Yeah, bye now. Bye.